Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Advertising is based on one thing, happiness. And you know what happiness is? Happiness is the smell of a new car. It's freedom from fear. It's a billboard on the side of the road that screams with reassurance that whatever you're doing, it's okay.
If you're a fan of Mad Men like we are, you're going to like Ben Perkert's debut novel, The Men Can't Be Saved. It's about an overly confident copywriter named Seth Terranoff. Seth is trying to recapture the success he had with an ad that went viral. But The Men Can't Be Saved is about much more than Seth's efforts to rediscover his glory days. The book also explores redemption, toxic masculinity, addiction, and spirituality. The central question is, what do our jobs do to our souls? The Men Can't Be Saved is funny and smart and gives you a lot to think about, both while you're reading and long after you've finished reading. And Ben knows this world. Before he became a poet and a novelist, Ben worked as a copywriter. He joins us now to talk about the book, what he learned about himself by writing it, and why he decided to pursue a career in advertising those many years ago.
Coming out of college, I really didn't know what to do. I wanted to be a published author. I didn't, frankly, want to be a copywriter at an ad agency or a branding agency. But as I started looking at job postings and I bumped my head against the reality, which is that college grads need to find a job, it seemed that this was one of the ways that I could take what I loved about my English education and apply it to business and make some money and pay off some loans. So that was really, you know, it was a practical decision. It wasn't a creative one.
Mm-hmm. If I read this correctly, that you asked your college advisor what you should do with your life, and your college advisor told you should be a copywriter?
Her advice was way more practical than I thought she would give me. You know, she just said, why don't you try copywriter first before you go off and try to write the great American poem or the great American novel or something like that. So she was very clear-headed, and it ended up being great advice, I think, because had I not had that experience working in that world of the ad agency, I don't think I would have written this novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that would be we would miss having this novel to read. When we think of advertising, we tend to think of Mad Men, the Mad Men era. How have things changed since the Mad Men era?
When I started working at the agency, it was right around the same time that Mad Men debuted. And I loved that show. My colleagues loved the show. We would gather, I think the show aired on Sunday nights, and then Monday mornings we'd come together into the office and we would talk about the show. And we would talk about, first of all the things that had changed from the 1960s to today, all these things that were unrecognizable. But then we would talk about the more interesting thing, which was everything that hadn't changed. And a lot of the electricity of the environment, a lot of the big personalities, the big egos, but also the toxicity, the ways in which underlings especially, like we were just treated like trash, whether it was the clients or the creative directors. And the bigger the ego on some level, the further you got in that world of business.
That was a bold last minute decision, going with your idea.
I thought it was more what they wanted.
Well, we'll never know, will we? Because they never heard mine.
Look, I don't like going in with two ideas. It's weak.
And you don't want to be weak, so you picked yours.
And they bought it, which is our goal, isn't it?
What do I care? I got a million of them. A million.
Good. I guess I'm lucky you work for me.
I feel bad for you.
I don't think about you at all.
And so, you know, if you squinted, it didn't feel that different from the Mad Men era to today. And so I wanted to write a book that examined that a little bit, all the ways in which this culture, even as it tells itself that it's a highly progressive environment, maybe hasn't evolved in the way that it likes to say it has.
Mm, yeah. How difficult was it for you to make the transition from writing poems to writing a novel?
It was a difficult transition because my background was really in poetry. It wasn't in fiction. And I just wasn't prepared for the scale. just wrapping my head around the fact that if you change something about your character on the first page, well, that's going to ripple throughout this entire landscape that you've created. That was incredibly daunting to me, but also it was a thrilling kind of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wrote an essay about the whole experience, and you said that you found yourself in hell at the beginning. Was it really that bad and tough for you?
Well, I was maybe being a bit, a bit hysterical there. I don't know that it was quite hell, but it felt sometimes like I had these tiny little nail scissors. Like I was used to bonsai. I was used to working at that level. And now I had this entire, soccer field that I had to cut the grass for. And it was just going to be this endless labor. But there's a lot of zen in that too. And I had to be patient. I would push a poem out probably before it was ready. You can't do that really with a novel. You have to cultivate a different relationship to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why it took, I guess, 10 years to write it. Yeah. Let's talk about your protagonist, Seth Taranoff. Can you tell us a bit about him?
Seth is one of these people who has a pretty overinflated sense of himself. It's hard to say that with authority because the book is in the first person. So we're in Seth's head. And when we meet him, he's really riding high. He's just written a tagline that's gone viral, albeit it's for a obscure brand of adult diapers. But, don't let that deter you, right? Seth thinks he's going to be partner at the agency any day now. And as the book progresses, we pretty quickly see that his vision of grandeur for himself is not going to be realized. And in fact, he's going to have a pretty steep downfall, even within the first few chapters. And what's interesting to me about Seth is the extent to which he does not see himself. But the characters around him, they do see him. And so as the reader, you move through an experience where on the one hand, you get the PR department of Seth. You get Seth telling the reader, what he sees for himself. But then you have these other characters who kind of splash him with cold water constantly. And that way in which not men exclusively, all of us can delude ourselves or sometimes not examine ourselves or see ourselves clearly. I wanted to look at that phenomenon in the book.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, Seth is still living off the glory of this commercial that he wrote a while back, which went viral. And you touched on it, but I wouldn't mind if you could give us a fuller description of what about the ad.
It's an ad for adult diapers for men specifically. And Seth, against all odds, has this tagline that goes viral. The tagline is the everyday breeze for the everyday hero. And he just envisions, that this is going to be on his mantle. This is going to be the thing on his resume that carries him, to the promised land. But he is not saved by this achievement. And it feels like no one else is as impressed with him as he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the major themes of The Man Can't Be Saved is toxic masculinity. And you mentioned that before. Why did you want to explore this idea?
I grew up with a notion or framing of masculinity that was really antithetical to vulnerability. Like to be a tough man was to be a man. And I think that that's the frame that a lot of us are given, not just men, but our society in general, that that's what masculinity is. And with a character like Seth, he's obsessed with making partner. And we all know these people. We may be those people. They want the title. They want the office. They're striving. And that often feels like a very masculine virtue, like to win and to get the prize is to do good. And Seth wants partnership within the agency. But I think if you think about that word partner, what he really wants is connection, is partnership in the sense of fraternity and intimacy. And that's what's so elusive for him. I wanted to explore masculinity and the things that are toxic about it or the ways in which it can become toxic, right? Because I don't want to conflate the two or suggest that masculinity is inherently toxic. But I think that we needed to see a character who tells himself he wants one thing when in fact, in his heart, he wants something else. And his loneliness is a counterbalance, I think, to the comedy of the book.
Yeah, very well said. You have this great quote that you mentioned in an interview I read, a great quote from the poet Philip B. Williams this line that he gave at a commencement speech. What have you experienced that has planted a seed in you that if it blooms to its fullest capacity, it could undo you? And you say that that is a question we all need to be asking ourselves, perhaps men especially. So when you ask yourself that Philip B. Williams question, what is the answer that you come up with?
I think it's a question to wrestle with more than to answer. To write this book, I think that it started out as more of a satire, more of an office place comedy in the style of something like The Office, for example, which I loved and I still love.
Mm-hmm. And also, it also reminded me a little bit of Joshua Ferris's Then We Came to the End, which also reminded me of The Office. Yeah,
I love that book so much. But, you know, I think that it was funny at first, right? We have this character, this copywriter who thinks he's the world, and then we watch him spiral down. And we laugh at him. But the more I worked on the book, the more I identified with Seth. And I began to ask myself, well, okay, Ben, what are the things that you think about yourself that may not be true? Just wrestling with that question is so important for men, but for all people to do. So that to me is the joy of writing and the joy of making art is that the danger of that discovery. Let me try to explore. Let me try to dig. And see what happens.
What is it about the advertising industry that brings out this latent toxicity in men?
There are ad agencies where friends of mine work that are wonderful places, that are supportive places. So I don't want to paint them all with the same brush. But the advertising, branding, marketing world really at its core is all about spin. It's all about taking the facts of something and then spinning it into a narrative. And I do think that that maneuver is frankly not all that different from the way in which we spin narratives about ourselves and we cast our behavior in a certain light, a favorable light. So is it that element of advertising that lends itself to toxic behavior? I think there may be something there.
After Seth loses his job, he starts to explore his spiritual side, and he strikes up this friendship with an Orthodox rabbi. What impact does the rabbi's faith have on Seth?
In the U.S., this is the first question we ask each other. Oh, what do you do for a living? In other cultures, we don't necessarily begin conversations that way, but here we do. And so for Seth to be a copywriter with this breakout tagline at a big New York agency, this is who he is. And when he loses that, he's in need of another brand for himself. And so I think this light goes off where, oh, well, I'm Jewish. I can identify more strongly and observe more deeply my Judaism. And so I think that the rabbi for him is an opportunity to re-identify. And one of the questions, though, is this a real spiritual awakening? Is it under the surface? Or is it just as I described? Is it a new way for him to be branded?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess it's up to the reader to decide which occurs, if either.
Yeah, that's my hope. I mean, my hope is that a lot of it is for the reader to decide. You know, I just sort of create the map and then the reader walks it.
Yeah, and yeah, definitely. And that's exactly what you did. And that's part of a big part, I would say, of what makes your novel so compelling. The big question that permeates your novel is, what do our jobs do to our souls? What do you think the answer to that question is?
For me, writing this novel over the course of a decade, that was the biggest job I've ever done. And it was, I want to say, healthy for my soul. It was unhealthy for some of my relationships, but for my soul, I felt deeply fulfilled writing this book. But then there are other kinds of jobs where it's 9 to 5, but it stretches way beyond the 5 and it starts to feel endless and you don't really have a sense of purpose. And I think that, you know, that is deadening to the soul. I think that it's really the kind of work that leads to a repression of self and then a sort of resentment that gets pushed out into the world.
What is the USP, the unique selling proposition that makes your novel, The Men Can't Be Saved, different from other novels set in the world of advertising?
Oh, well, now you're asking me to advertise my own. You're asking
me for an ad. Yeah, we're going Rosser Reeves mode here.
Oh, this is meta. So you mentioned Joshua Ferris's Then We Came to the End. And that book is really funny. And it's a zany look at the ad agency world from the perspective of first person plural. That book is written largely in the we. You do something different in Joshua Ferris's book. You get more of this Greek chorus sense of the agency. And I think that's really valuable. But I've always personally been drawn to books that are first person, where we just inhabit one person's, frankly, diseased mind. I would like to think that my book offers a coming of age story of what the advertising business looks like today, both for its joys and also its ills.
Yeah, and I think you've done that. Ben Perkert, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on The Men Can't Be Saved. It's a terrific debut novel, and I look forward to reading your next book.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Ben Perkert is a poet and the author of the novel The Men Can't Be Saved. Find out more about Ben and his book at wpr.org/beta.
Stephen King is so famous today in part because of his influence on cinema.
Coming up, French director and actress Daphne Beywear joins us to talk about her documentary, King on Screen. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.